Welcome to the Tapping World Summit 2010. This is your host, Jessica Ortner. By listening to this interview, you agree to the terms located at thetappingworldsummit.com/disclaimer. I hope this interview helps you become a healthier and a happier you. Enjoy. No one can refute the fact that our childhood affects our current life. But how much of an impact does it really have, and how much control do we have over the way it's impacting us? In this interview, all these questions and many more will be answered. If you feel like an event in your past is holding you back from the future you want, then I'm very happy to say that you have found yourself in the right place. We will be speaking to Rick Wilkes. Rick is the founder of ThrivingNow.com and a star of the film The Tapping Solution. In the past 6 years, he has worked with over 1,500 clients and has become known for his innovative methods. It's a real pleasure to have him. Welcome, Rick.
Hi, Jessica. I'm very excited, and I'm also humbled about this subject. I'm excited because tapping gives us an empowering way to shift those energies from childhood, which are holding us back today. And I'm also humbled because of any of the areas which can be emotionally intense, childhood traumas can be. And so I encourage everyone, take care of yourself. If you need to pause this recording, take a break, take a walk if you get triggered, and particularly keep tapping. Just tap the points as you're listening if anything's coming up for you. And it also might be helpful to have a notepad. If any specific events start coming up to you, take a note of them, write them down, and have them for later.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, Rick, we're talking about childhood traumas. Now, let's just get to the basic word trauma. How do you define it? What is it?
It's an apparently life-threatening situation where we perceive that we are defenseless. That's the definition we're going to use. And again, apparently, the appearance of something like rejection may be, quote, life-threatening. You know, as children, we're vulnerable. We're vulnerable to a lot of things, and we're tuned to being protected by the adult parents around us. And something that appears like a threat to us coming from them, appearance of a rejection, of not finding our parents when we're at a playground for a few seconds and feeling like, oh my goodness, they've left me. That type of thing can be very traumatic for a child, even though as adults, as we looked at it, we might see it, oh, no, she just was over there talking to her friend. To a child in that moment, that's a trauma. If they have a very strong emotional reaction and they don't have the logic to be able to perceive the situation as an adult would perceive it. So it gets internalized and frozen in time.
So when these traumas occur, what are the different ways that we react to them? I mean, are we all the same?
Well, if you look at how people react to the same situation quite differently, but from a very primitive standpoint, we have a part of our brain, the primitive brain we're going to call it, that has three natural responses. We often hear about fight or flight, the fight or flight response, but there's a third component, freeze. And this is the one that is so crucial to understanding traumas of any kind, but particularly childhood traumas. So during the process of being domesticated as a child, learning social mores, how you behave in certain situations, well, we're trained out of fighting. Don't hit your brother. You know, you're not supposed to protect yourself even in school by the natural response, which might be to bop him one. And you're not supposed to run. If the teacher's mean to you, you have to sit there and take it. You can't run out of the school and run home where it might feel safer to you. So what happens in what we see is that there's an overabundance of freeze response in children. And so that's one of the reasons why bringing tapping to these frozen times where, and again, trauma is not just the big things like a car accident, being struck or abused. Trauma, again, is anything where you feel that freeze response, like a shock, a horror, overhearing someone say something that you perceive as diminishing you as a person. You know, Johnny's such an idiot. Well, if Johnny overhears that, and Johnny's 5 years old, and he knows how important it is to be smart, he just internalized a trauma of being called an idiot. So that's the kind of thing that that we're talking about.
So, Rick, once these traumas occur, where are they stored? How do they stay with us?
Well, unresolved traumas are stored in the mind, in the body-mind. They're not just stored in the brain. You know, most neurological studies have focused about where trauma is stored in the brain, but those of us who do body work, I'm a licensed massage therapist, know that the body itself also stores trauma. And from a brain standpoint, we often talk about the conscious mind and the subconscious mind. Well, multiple studies have shown that the subconscious, well, when it stores a trauma, it does not distinguish between past events and present ones. And to tie this into what people may know about the law of attraction, your subconscious is generating a vibration. And so even though the event itself isn't happening right now, if some present-day experience starts smelling or sounding or looking like that old trauma, it can trigger a recall of the energy of the old incident. And so you start radiating in that place. You start attracting more of the same. And so that's a very important aspect of when we see that you do tapping on these old traumas, your present-day life starts shifting.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, from just a behavioral standpoint, it can feel sometimes like the old trauma is happening again right now. We may even get the same kind of adrenaline rush, the same primitive brain response. We may be feeling like we want to fight or run this time, where last time we had to freeze, but we're still stuck. We're still stuck in that energy.
Mm-hmm. So, Rick, I think it's safe to say that most of us with our busy lifestyles, we're not always thinking about, you know, these childhood traumas, the time that we were embarrassed or we felt ashamed. So is what you're saying with all of this is even if we are not aware of the childhood trauma, even if we're not thinking about it because we're just so busy, it's still right. Affecting us in the present moment.
There would be no use whatsoever of going back and looking at our past negative life experiences if there was not some practical reason to do so. That's my approach. If there's not a practical reason for connecting with those memories, it would be like me seeing a movie that I hated and going back and watching it again. The purpose of what we're doing here is we're, one, acknowledging that, you know, our mirror neurons in our brain have stored the event, and it's still using it to interpret our current day situation. And again, so if something triggers that part of our brain, the memory is being replayed. If I touched a hot stove and I burnt my hand at 3 years of age and it was a red stove, I may find that I am nervous around red metal objects because my brain made a somewhat primitive, somewhat simplistic connection between red metal and a burn. Some people might say, that would be silly. I wouldn't make that kind of connection. Well, you're an adult listening to this. Of course you wouldn't make that connection. You have a lot more to hang your experiences on than a 1-year-old, a 2-year-old, a 3-year-old, a 7-year-old, an 11-year-old doesn't have the same kind of logical, rational brain. It hasn't developed yet to the same way.
Mm-hmm. And it seems that it does serve a greater purpose. I mean, really, it's us trying to keep ourselves safe.
Very much so. And also, we need to be able to shortcut experiences. We need to know that when metal glows, that it's hot and we shouldn't touch it. You don't want to be relearning that experience over and over again. If someone is belligerent and you know that it's not going to be a good experience to try to talk to them, you'll want to move away from people who are belligerent. But if we learned as a child that you had to stand there and take it, another person's belligerence, you may find it very difficult until you clear that trauma of being able to set healthy boundaries with your mate, with your parents, with your boss. That is one of the beautiful side effects of doing this work, is that if you have a situation, I'll use an example of, let's say that somebody was given a $20 bill, they're 7 years old, right? And that was a lot of money. I mean, they felt rich. Think of all the candy bars I could have bought when I was 7 years old with $20. Now, if some bullies come and beat you up and steal it from you, and you couldn't run, and you couldn't defend yourself, what we see when working with clients is that a person with this kind of childhood trauma, they may not relate it at all, but what they notice in the present time is that, well, they have this irrational fear about having a lot of money. When you ask them, well, does it feel safe to have a lot of money? Their body goes, no, and they don't necessarily understand why, but they also see that they, quote, avoid becoming wealthy. They do things that sabotage themselves. They miss opportunities. They don't return phone calls. They procrastinate, or they gamble it away. That type of thing happens, and it is related. At least there's an energy doorway. I won't necessarily say it's always causative, meaning I had this trauma with the $20 bill, and that's why I definitely and behaving this way in the present time. But what we notice in this experimental technique we call tapping, which has decades of experience now, but we're still looking at how it really is working. If I go back with a client and I tap on their experience with the $20 bill, and then they notice on their own that their behavior is changing in the present time. They feel more comfortable having money. They can carry more cash with them and feel relaxed in their body. And they start behaving differently. Well, I would say that's a clue, a very useful clue about how our earlier traumas were affecting our present day. And that by going through that doorway and healing it, now we've got behaviors that are changing in a way that's pleasing to people. That's what we're all about. Practically allowing you to go back through these doorways of old childhood traumas, which, you know, again, stored in the brain, stored in the body, and we want to figure out a way to release those in as painless and quick a way as possible so that we don't have to keep going back to them and so that we can move on with our life and feeling surprisingly calm and confident.
Great. Well, I'm up for that, and I'm sure many of our listeners are. So if they're listening to this and we're all ready to take the step forward and to start getting results with tapping, what do we do?
Okay. Well, I'm going to assume that people have done some tapping for themselves, and if they haven't yet, go ahead and listen to what we're talking about. But tapping, because it is a way of connecting thoughts, our perceptions, and adding some physical stimulation with the tapping itself on these powerful comfort points. Well, tapping, from everything that I've seen, is one of the most effective, quick, and painless ways to address these energies that are still stuck in the body, frozen in the body, and to do so in a way that is, in many cases, most cases even, a permanent shift around very specific events. Mm-hmm. And there are tapping techniques that have been developed by the pioneers in the field. Some of those are like looking at, and some of this came from NLP even, before tapping, and a lot of us are flowing ideas into this stream of the tapping techniques to be able to be more effective, and one of those is to watch the scene. Some call it the movie technique. Watch the scene as it was unfolding and tap on what you see, what you hear, what you smell, how it feels in your body now, to go through that slowly, and then to look at it again to see if the event has changed. That is very effective for childhood traumas. The tearless trauma technique is essentially just sneaking up on it, starting just knowing that you have a trauma, noticing how you feel about it in the body, and I'll give you an example. if you know that you remember a time when your father yelled at you because you were a bad boy, bad girl, and I'm tuning into one right now, I start feeling that in my chest, my upper chest. So I would just tap, even though I have this memory of my father yelling at me, and I feel it in my chest. I deeply and completely accept myself. Now, just doing that setup statement while I was tapping the karate chop point, Jessica, the tension in my chest started to shift. Mm. And for many people, if they just say, even though I have this memory and I feel it in my chest, I accept myself and all of my feelings, even though my body is scared, because maybe it's frozen right then in that time, I give my body permission to let go of the trauma. Now, then you tap the points as you normally would in the tapping techniques. Now, that may be enough to take the edge off of it. And if you're working with someone and the trauma was very significant, it's not just a matter of being yelled at, but something that was really traumatic, I do encourage people to work with a professional if it is a big, life-changing, traumatic event. But just taking the edge off when the memory comes up can help a person feel empowered in a way that they've never felt before. So many times, traumas have a way of spurting out at the most inopportune moments. I work with a CEO, and when he would think about going and talking to his staff, he would his old traumas from childhood about being ridiculed would squirt out in sweat and red face and other types of reactions. Just the first time that he realized that he could do some tapping on what he was feeling right then and there gave him a sense of empowerment and hope that he could shift this. And that's one of my main messages in this, is that as more of us realize and see and witness and experience for ourselves how a trauma that was so intense that we just used a lot of energy to stay away from it can be healed and even healed completely at our fingertips, mm, and in a surprisingly short amount of time, I think it will change how we talk about traumas and our expectation of how people, you know, I was watching Dr. Phil, and he had a series of really traumatic events, and I saw the traditional approach as Dr. Phil practiced it. But what was interesting to me is I knew, even though they weren't using tapping, that if these people ever come across a person who knows tapping and can teach it to them, that they could permanently shift the energies around it. And that's why I'm so passionate about this very intense subject.
And I think that's why this kind of work and tapping is spreading so quickly, because people are having these incredible results. And when you see it change your life, you can't help but just to tell everyone around you.
Now, I think it's appropriate here to mention that sometimes the number of traumas that someone experienced early in their life is measured in dozens, even hundreds. Mm. And when I've worked with someone, let's say they want to be a public speaker, but they have one key life-changing event when they were in sixth grade where everyone laughed at them when they weren't prepared. And every time they think about public speaking, that specific event, that traumatic event comes up. If you tap on that specific event, and there aren't any others, there aren't layer after layer after layer of traumas on top of it, oftentimes that person will see an immediate shift. Sometimes it's called a one-minute miracle. They will behave completely different because the part of their brain that thinks about being in front of others, the primitive part of their brain that says, is this safe, will have shifted completely because it has discharged that old trauma that was saying, no, 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 no. But realistically, when we work with people who were traumatized over a long period of time, perhaps they were raised by an alcoholic, maybe there was inappropriate sexual boundaries or none at all, I just want to say that that person's journey may be very unique. And what I love about tapping is that as an emotional freedom coach rather than a therapist, what I'm doing is teaching people how to use it for themselves. I'm teaching them to, yes, get and work with professionals, but also understand how to use this for yourself. And that will help them feel empowered as they move through their journey. And I just wanted to say and put, they're not really expectations. Everyone's journey can be different. Appropriately setting the understanding that for some people the journey is a year or 2 years.
Right, and you're right on point calling it a journey, and it's very soothing and a wonderful way to look at it like that, because that's exactly what it is. It's a journey. So when we're on this journey, Rick, what is the technique that you commonly use?
Well, I've used the movie technique, the Toe's Trauma technique. I've used Tell the Story. Those are very, very helpful ways. One of the things that we're doing now is an approach that the generic term for it is inner tapping. That's what my partner Kathy Vartuli and I are calling it. It's a term we welcome anyone to use. It's not trademarked. We don't intend to trademark it. It is an approach where instead of tapping, looking at the movie, for example, and tapping on ourselves as how we feel, we tap on the internalized child or the younger you that's still frozen in the negative experience. And it's a bit like surrogate tapping for the child that was you. That's another way of looking at it. But one of the reasons we're doing this is that it seems to directly affect how the memory is stored. And also, it displaces the emotions and the overwhelm onto a, you know, quote, child. So it is generally possible to focus and think more clearly and have less body reactions yourself. I mean, one of the goals all along with tapping was to be able to make it as pain-free as possible. Doesn't mean you won't sob when you reconnect with your inner child who was abandoned or hurt, but that's different than, quote, becoming that child and reliving the experience. And so since a lot of my work is on group coaching calls where my clients are around the world, we have found that inner tapping is quick. It also doesn't tend to traumatize the people who are listening quite as much. They can still connect with and borrow benefits for their own stories, but it seems to be more gentle. And also, it's really nice that it leaves people and it tends to leave them in a very high vibration place, a place of compassion and caring. And we think of it as a highly effective way to reverse the effects of the trauma and empower those aspects of us that were frozen.
And how did this inner tapping approach come from? How did it come about?
Well, I remember the first book I read about an inner child was, you know, well over 20 years ago. Conventional approaches have been doing inner child work for many decades. We've been influenced by Shirley Jean Schmidt, who introduced mirror neurons to the inner child work. Carl Dawson, who is a tapping expert himself, he has his own technique called matrix re-imprinting, and I love watching him work as well. He does this very artfully. And I've been particularly influenced by neurologist Dr. Robert Scare's work on the storage and release of trauma in the body. He presented at a seminar that I attended of Carol Look's, and it was a very useful way of looking at what is a healthy way of discharging trauma. How can we do that? How can we integrate what we know about the brain and what we feel about the body and how people experience memories to create a more effective technique?
Rick, can you walk us through step by step how this, inner child technique works?
Sure. Okay, so if you want to do inner tapping, the first step is to identify a specific event. With tapping, the more specific that you get, the better. This isn't always possible. In fact, let's say that there were dozens of traumas of a child feeling unsafe in an alcoholic environment. What we'll do is have them picture the child, tune into the child, and start getting specific, like, how old is she? And if the person doesn't know, if you don't know exactly, just guess. 5, 7, you'll start feeling into your body the rightness of, as you start narrowing in. So how old is she? Where do you see him? You know, is he on a bed? Is he in the living room, in the kitchen, sitting down? What is she wearing? A dress, pajamas, you know, and then you start getting more specific about what the feeling is. What is he seeing or feeling? Where is the feeling in the body? Now, as we have someone tuning in, if they're starting to get intense, if their intensity level starts rising, 2, 3, 5, we want them tapping. Tap the collarbone. Tap the karate chop point. The idea here is that we're using our imagination to connect with the memory.
So you're tapping without saying anything, Rick, right? You're just...
Well, right now, we're
tapping.
Just tuning, we're tuning in, okay? Mm-hmm. This is the first step, is to tune in to this, using our imagination, connect with the memory itself,
okay?
But while you're doing that, tap top of the head, eyebrow, side of the eye, under the eye. If this is your memory or you're the practitioner, start tapping. Don't wait until it gets it up to an 8, 9, or 10, okay? Start tapping. Tap the karate chop. No, you're not saying anything specific. You're just tapping and stimulating these comfort points as you're tuning in. Because the key thing is that as you tune in, you know, the energies and emotions are real and present to the subconscious body-mind. And so if there's a lot of intensity in the situation, you know, you can do some things to reduce the trauma right at the start. You can freeze the situation. Just everybody's frozen except for the inner child. That's one way to do it. Mm-hmm. Move the child to a safe place. Kathy, on our calls, sometimes will tell people to imagine that Rick's taking Dad off to tap with him. And there's a sudden release and relief as the person tunes into that. Oh, okay. Well, yeah, he needs a lot of help. We'll send him off for tapping for the next 50 years, and that way it helps them focus. Imagine bringing and giving a teddy bear or something to the inner child as well. If it's becoming too intense for you, take a break. You know, stop for a moment. Just tap for yourself. Even though this feels very intense to me, I'm okay.
Okay.
Tap, 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 tap.
And Rick, do you always imagine tapping on the inner child?
One of the interesting things about trauma is that by its definition, the traumatic event made the child, and again, I sometimes call them younger yous, because you might have been 21, you might have been 37, you might have been 57. It's just any point in your history. But there's a defenselessness, there's a disempowerment, there's a I don't know what to do here to save myself feeling. So one of the ways that we start shifting that energy right from the start is we ask permission. Would you like some help right now? You picture yourself walking into the scene, and you honor their boundary to say whether they want to be touched or not.
And if they say
no?
Isn't
that interesting? Then if they say no, you're just going to tap for yourself. You're going to tap on yourself for them. You could do surrogate tapping right there as well.
Okay.
Now, most of the time, I would say well over 90% of the time, there is permission. Because this part of us is coming up for relief. It is coming up for the discharge of the trauma. And so once you have permission, and most of the time that's going to be the case, sometimes it may just take a moment to change the situation, maybe move to a different location in your memory, in your imagination. Okay?
Okay.
And then once you have permission, you just imagine you're tapping on the child. So you imagine a little 7-year-old or a 3-year-old hand in yours, and you're tapping on the karate chop point, while you're physically tapping on yourself as an adult.
Okay, and this is all while you're imagining something. It's before you start saying anything?
That's right.
Okay.
Well, you're, again, setting the scene. This has taken longer to describe, usually, than it takes to set up. Mm-hmm. You know, with a client on the call, we can usually get to the place where we're starting to tap with the inner child in a minute. Where are they? How old are they? Freeze the situation. You know, as you walk up to the child, ask, you know, would you like some help?
Okay.
You know, can I help you? And once you've done that, now you're going to start, you're noticing, what are they feeling? And that's what you ask. What are they feeling? They're feeling terrified. Where do they feel it in their body, in their belly? Now, what's interesting is that sometimes the adult who has this memory will feel it in their belly as well. Sometimes not. That gives me a clue that there's something going on here about tapping into the deeper energies about what the trauma was, where it was stored in the body.
And what happens if you're tapping with the inner child, but after a little while, there's still intensity?
Well, more of the process is that we treat the client, the child like it's a client. We tap on the specifics of what's coming up, what they feel, what their beliefs are, and we respect their reactions. You know, we're resisting any impulse to quick fix or deny the feelings that are come up. I hate him. You know, it's okay for the child to hate their father. Even if they never could have expressed that in that moment, it would have been unsafe to. We, you know, encourage positive aspects, how smart they are, the courage, their strength. Make sure that they're feeling heard where they are in their frozen state before you start offering options. And if they still start feeling intense after that, a lot of times there are other aspects. As we, you know, anyone who's done tapping a lot notices that there are multiple aspects to many situations. So it's useful to look at, you know, the other human beings involved in the event, do some tapping on them. You know, if dad caused the trauma, tap on him. That can help shift it a tremendous amount.
Mm-hmm. Once the event has shifted for the inner child, what's next?
Well, I've always felt that one of the important ways that people like Dr. Carrington, Patricia Carrington, and Carol Look have brought to tapping is this movement of the energy from a place of suffering and trauma to feeling okay, but then from okay to how do they want to feel? What's the choice that they want to make? To me, this is fundamental to energy tapping. If you take people to just so that they're unfrozen, but now what? Now what? And so the now what is you ask this inner child what would help them feel safe. What would they like to do? Okay? How would they like to go play? Would they like a cookie, an ice cream? And to, in your imagination, take them and take them to the beach to play with the dolphins. Hold them in your arms with a nice warm blanket if that's what they need. You're really, in this role, acting like the deepest friend, reparenting yourself, giving yourself the compassion and comfort that was absolutely missing in that traumatic moment. And when you do that and you allow the child to do that and you start feeling into what that inner child is feeling and you allow then your own body to radiate and to feel that feeling as well, bring your focus into your heart, allow the energy to flow from head to toe, let it radiate out to the universe in gratitude and appreciation. You literally have transformed frozen trauma energy into empowering energy for your life right now. And it allows a full integration, and that's what we're really looking for, is the integration of an empowerment of our energy.
Mm-hmm. And with that, what else do you see with all the people that you work with, that once they shift to these things, how does it affect their current life and the way that they reflect on their childhood?
It it's been fascinating to me to see that by suggesting that people like check in with their inner child over the next coming weeks and months, you know, they develop a relationship, they kind of reparent in their imagination, that they feel more empowered with the traumas that might be in, not traumas, but the difficult situations that may be in their life in the moment. They feel like they have some energy to offer. They're literally reparenting themselves, and in effect, I've seen people become the kind of balanced, centered, compassionate, generous, trusting of their own guidance, aware but not vigilant in a scared way of what's going on around them, that you would normally see in somebody that had a great childhood, you know? And that frees up so much energy to live a thriving life in the present moment.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Rick, when we're ready to do this process, what should we expect? How long does it take?
Well, I've done sessions. Typically, we get a lot done in 15 minutes. For more complex situations, where it may take an hour or two, usually I find that, you know, 15 minutes to a half hour of tapping doing inner tapping gets someone to a place where they feel like they need to integrate what's happened. And I'm not a big fan of overdoing it, dredging up thousands of things and tapping on them for long extended periods of time. I think if you can get to a place where it feels like things are safe and okay, that can be a good stopping point.
Mm-hmm. In a moment, we're going to be doing some tapping. For those who are listening, if they're tapping along, are they still going to find benefits, even though we're not tapping on their specific inner child?
Yes, one of the wonders of energy is that it has an intelligence to it. If you focus in on a specific event of your own and you were to write that down, I like to encourage people to write it down and how intense it is, how you see this inner child of yours feeling, and then you were even to take your attention off of it for a moment and do some tapping with us on another event, come back to it. See what has shifted and changed in that scene for you. Sometimes it's already been done.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's ripened the situation for you to a place where you know what to do next.
Okay. And before we start, or before someone starts using this process for childhood traumas, what should they keep in mind, and can people really do this by themselves?
Well, traumas by their definition are distressing events. You're working with issues of powerlessness and pain. And so just ask yourself the question, do you feel ready to go there? Personally, if you're working, if the issue is yours, or professionally, if you're working with a client. Traumas involve feelings of being unsafe, unprotected. And I think for that reason alone, I personally recommend that people work with someone skilled in using tapping techniques, inner tapping, someone that they feel safe with, because that creates an interesting dynamic. Many times my clients will invite me into the scene, especially if they've worked with me for several months. It's inviting someone safe. Again, it doesn't have to, it's in their imagination. I don't even have to be on the call. I don't even have to be aware of that. And I offer that to anyone. If anyone wants to invite me into the scene of their inner child, and if I can be helpful energetically, spiritually, I'm there. But there's a beauty in working with someone else that allows you to relax a bit more. It's a bit like, if you're going into the haunted house, isn't it nice to have somebody holding your hand and carrying a big flashlight?
Mm-hmm.
It can change that.
And Rick, if we do decide that we want to have this experience for ourselves, you know, it's obviously when you start not the most pleasant thing to think about these experiences. And I think what's very common is we can think about 100 other things that we could do on our to-do list before we get to sitting down and taking these 15 minutes. Is there any advice that you have for anyone who finds that they keep kind of putting it off, or they might be a little bit resistant to trying it?
Well, sure. Well, my fundamental teaching is take baby steps. You don't have to rush it. Even though there's a part of me that wants to do this and a part of me that doesn't, I accept this conflict. There's no rush. And no, I refuse to do it. No, I won't. We call it refusal tapping. You know, even though I want to do this, I refuse to do this, and I accept myself anyway. And tapping, no, I won't, can often free up some energy and clarity about what's next. But again, if you're not feeling safe proceeding at the beginning, I take that as guidance. Change your scene. Do you need to develop a relationship with someone to help you? Do you need to tap on just the anxiety in your breathing for a week, a month, before you're ready to feel calm and confident going there? Do you need to take something that's kind of silly and trivial and do inner tapping on that? I always encourage that. Take something that's not your big issue. Take something silly like, you know, Betty calling you a buffoon. You know, it hurt. Okay, we'll go back to Betty calling you a buffoon. Where were you? What were you feeling? Tap with yourself about it. Let yourself be nasty to Betty if that's what yourself wanted to do, until you get to a place where, oh, I'm okay. Yeah, it wasn't very nice.
Mm-hmm. Great.
And take something that's trivial like that and work your way up to it. Your intuition will typically not let you go someplace that you're not ready to unless you really force yourself. And I never encourage people to force themselves with willpower in this work. That is not helpful usually. Creates more intensity and more distress. Wait for the banana to be ripe and perfect for you before you eat the big old green banana.
Okay. Rick, can we do an example of just kind of take us through the process so we can see a little bit more what it's like and experience it for ourselves?
Sure, love to. Do you want me to use a personal example that I...
Yeah, I'd really appreciate it. And I'll say to the listeners that I'm going to follow along with Rick so you can join me and tap along with Rick.
Okay. Now, I noticed at a party, a karaoke party, that a part of me wanted to get up and sing. I've done karaoke many times in the privacy of my own home and shower, and even in front of some family members, and I like it. It's fun. But I was not going to get up there, and because this was a different audience. Now, to me, these are the types of experiences we all have as human beings. There's something we want to do, but it's outside of our comfort zone. Okay? Mm-hmm. So how do you use tapping on that? How specifically do you use inner tapping on that? Well, where did I learn that it was unsafe, unfun, to be singing in front of other people? Now, for me, I go back to eighth grade. In eighth grade, I was in a drama group. I loved it. I loved the drama group. Great group of people. I've never felt more at home amongst a group of people, except I was not the best singer. My voice was changing. I was I was singing somewhere between a soprano and a bass, and it changed from moment to moment, but not in a traditional way. I just sounded bad by my ear compared to how I feel today. And see, so some of the aspects are coming up. I'm picturing myself on stage. We're doing a rehearsal. I have two lines to sing. And what's going through my inner child energy is everybody else is a better singer than I am. Everybody else is being told how good they are, but I've never heard those words from anyone other than my mother, who loves me anyway, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's his feeling. I'm not as good as everybody else. And as I walk up to him in my mind, you know, hey, Ricky, you know, would you like some help with this? I've kind of frozen the scene, and he's nodding, yes, please. And I'm noticing, I ask him, you know, where are you feeling this in your body, this fear that you're not good enough, you're not as good as everybody else, in his throat, okay? I could see his throat, at the front of his throat, in my mind's eye, as I'm looking at him, you know, I've got glasses, I've got red in front of my throat, and I'm going to take a moment and just feel like a powerful adult male coming back to help my younger self. So I'm putting on a little bit more confidence, okay, and I'm just going to start tapping with him. And at the karate chop point, I would say something like,
even though I'm scared right now,
I accept myself anyway.
I accept myself anyway.
Even though I'm not as good a singer as they are.
Even though I'm not as good a singer as they are.
And sometimes I croak.
And sometimes I croak.
And sometimes I'm off key.
And sometimes I'm off key.
And sometimes I even forget what I'm supposed to sing.
And sometimes I even forget what I'm supposed to sing.
I'm okay.
I'm okay.
I'm still a good actor.
And still a good actor.
And then I'm tapping on the top of my head now while I'm imagining here on stage just tapping on the top of his head. This scared feeling in my throat.
This scared feeling in my throat.
Eyebrows. I'm tapping, in my mind's eye, I'm tapping on both his eyebrows at the same time. This scared feeling in my throat.
This scared feeling in my throat.
Out of the eye. It's so helpful.
It's so helpful.
I see him smile, right, into the eye. This terrified feeling in my throat.
This terrified feeling in my throat.
Under the nose. I don't want to do this.
I don't want to do this.
And I do want to do this.
And I do want to do this.
Hold on. And I really don't want to do this.
And I really don't want to do this.
Under the arm. A part of me wants to run.
A part of me wants to run.
Top of the head. But I can't.
But I can't.
Eyebrow. Remaining fear in my throat.
Remaining fear in my throat.
Out of the eye. I'm not as good as they are.
I'm not as good as they are.
Under the eye. So what?
So what?
Under the nose. I'm smarter than most of them.
I'm smarter than most of them.
Chin. And they accept me anyway.
And they accept me anyway.
Collarbone. And they love to sing.
And they love to sing.
Under the arm. And I do too.
And I do too.
Stop it. I choose to just have a really good time here.
I choose to just have a really good time here.
And I'm encouraging him to take a deep breath. And in my mind's eye, the redness on the throat is gone. Mm-hmm. And I'm sensing a constriction in the chest. Okay?
Rick, before
just in my mind's eye. Go ahead.
Before we move on, I have a quick question. When someone's listening to this, you're doing a few things. You're tapping on how your inner child is feeling, and you're also tapping on what you want them to feel. You're putting some positive things in. For someone who's new, how do they figure out whether they're saying the right thing to their inner child while tapping?
Well, there's no wrong thing. You will know that you're making progress because you'll see some change or you won't. And if you don't see a change, you just ask a question. Like, well, what do you feel right now? If I ask a client who's in this process, what's coming up for him right now? And just take a moment and connect with that. And you can be very simple, and I'll do it more simply for this next round. My inner Ricky in eighth grade is got a perfection tension in his chest. He just really wants to be perfect, okay? And so I would just, let's just do it real simple, basic mechanical tapping, okay? Mm-hmm. Even though I have this perfection tension in my chest.
Even though I have this perfection tension in my chest.
I deeply and completely accept myself.
I deeply and completely accept myself.
Even though I have this perfection tension in my chest.
Even though I have this perfection tension in my chest.
I deeply and completely accept myself.
I deeply and completely accept myself.
And I'm picturing he and I standing up and saying it really loudly, even though I have this perfection tension in my chest.
Even though I have this perfection tension in my chest.
I deeply. And completely. Accept myself anyway. Now, my impression is that it's down from an 8 or 9 down to a 3, but I'm going to keep tapping, top of the head. Remaining perfection tension in my chest. Eyebrow. This remaining perfection tension in my chest. Out of the eye. This remaining perfection tension in my chest. Under the eye. I'm letting it go. Nose. This remaining perfection tension. Chin. I'm letting it go. Elbow. This remaining perfection tension. Under the arm. I'm letting the rest of it go. Up ahead. And I choose to be surprisingly calm and confident. Okay. In my imagination, we take a deep breath, kind of give each other high fives, which was not in style back then, but hey, you know, something new.
It's in style now, right?
Wonderful. You know, and I'm asking him, you know, how do you feel? And, you know, he's kind of nodding his head. He feels good. And we go on with the next step, which is, what do you want to do? Do you want to stay here? Do you want to, you know, go sing karaoke? What? What's karaoke? And he wants to stay. And then I ask him, do you want me to be a witness out in the audience? And I wait for an answer. And he said, yeah, that'd be great. I'd like your support. Now, so I go into the audience and I just let the scene play out. And yeah, he's having a good time. It's a great line or two that he's singing.
Mm-hmm. And Rick, when someone's doing this and they're trying to figure out the phrases that they want to say, when should they tap on the feelings and talk about how they feel, and when should they switch into the positive? I know I kind of asked you this before, and you were a lot more simple with the negative, but I just want to make it really clear, because I know a lot of people get very hung up on whether they're doing it right and whether they're saying the right thing.
Yeah, I know that they do, because they probably have that perfectionist feeling in their chest. Maybe that tapping helped them. What's interesting is if you say something to an inner child which is overly positive, like, you don't need to feel this way, it's okay to feel safe, it's okay to feel confident, and it's not true, in your imagination, you'll see that you didn't, you know, those of us who are practitioners all the time, we know how to read those signals. But this is great, because you start learning the signals of yourself. Mm-hmm. If you say, I'm a wonderful person, I'm a good kid, and that doesn't really feel true to your memory, your traumatized memory, your traumatized inner child, they'll shake their head. They'll look at you like, you're a liar, right? You're paying attention to your memory and how it reacts to the world. This is the fascinating thing. Our memories are always reacting in the world. We are reacting to our experiences throughout our entire life. Inner tapping starts getting people in tune with, well, how does your inner experience react to the world? If you call your inner child beautiful and she looks at you like, I'll never trust you again because you're a liar, well, now you know something about yourself. You know that if somebody gives you an honest compliment, that you can't accept it yet. Oh, even though I can't trust myself with my compliments. So again, you can't go wrong. If you are too fast with a positive, I usually, you know, look for a sign of relief and then start testing with, you know, something that's a little more positive. But if you go too fast, it's okay. You know, it's just like with yourself. When you say, I deeply and completely accept myself, sometimes that feels totally, utterly not true. It's a positive statement, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Even in the very basics of our tapping, we're giving people a positive statement. I deeply and completely accept myself. For some people starting out, that's a zero. You have got to be kidding me. I don't at all accept myself. Well, why is that? Where did you learn not to accept yourself? Well, when I was 5 years old, there you are. There, you could do inner tapping with that, you know, that five-year-old who internalized the message, don't accept yourself. Don't accept yourself. Because there almost certainly is a traumatized part of you that learned, hey, I'm feeling really good about myself, and somebody says, who are you to toot your own horn? Uh-oh. That's a little T trauma.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But it can change the way that we react in the rest of our life. And that specific event then becomes the doorway through which we change that energy.
And Rick, what do we do when we're tapping on this, you know, a specific incident, but then another memory comes up in our mind?
Continue the process if you feel like you're ready to.
In what sense, as we continue with the first memory that we chose, or even if the first memory is not cleared, we go to the other one that's presented itself?
Well, again, we're using our imagination, and mm-hmm. I would ask my inner child, hey, do you want me to go work with your five-year-old self or continue with you and see what guidance you get? Now, this may sound very strange to people who are not used to having a conversation with themselves in a positive, supportive, compassionate way.
Right. And,
but what's
interesting, we're always taught that imagination is for children, and it's kind of useless fantasy.
Yeah.
So this is something completely different. But what's amazing is from your stories, people are really getting a lot of results from this.
Well, we go back to the science, and the science knows this. If you were 7 years old and you were suddenly traumatized and you did not discharge the trauma by shaking and crying and you internalized it and did not discharge it in a healthy way, then there's a part of your brain, and I expand that to say part of who you are, that is still in that energy, frozen there, asking why, wanting for it to be different, wanting relief. Now, how do you get back to that? Why not use our imagination? Professional athletes imagine running a pass play, skiing down a hill, doing the vault. They imagine a perfect 10. They imagine swimming faster than the world record, faster than any human being has ever swum. And we honor their accomplishments. Why can't we imagine going back and giving a part of ourselves who did not get compassion, did not get protection, did not get relief, did not get a warm cookie and a chocolate sundae? Why can't we go and use our imagination to do that? And I see no reason not to. And the more that I've used this, I see the beauty in it. And I've worked with women, their parents, and they don't parent like they were parented. Many of them have really tried so hard to be different than the abuse that they experienced as children. That's beautiful. But when they connect to their own childhood, they feel disempowered. They feel tense. As they have started just doing this type of work with their own inner children, they bring all the skill that they have as a parent now to reparenting those memories. And they find that they can reperceive their whole childhood. It may still be a movie that they don't want to watch. However, they can often connect with the other times, the times when they weren't frozen, the times that were simple pleasures, the friends that they had who they had forgotten because so much of their childhood was traumatic. And again, if somebody's childhood really was quite traumatic, I feel completely confident that tapping in the hands of working with a professional can be extremely effective for people. We're still experimenting, and I feel that I want people to use appropriate support, have a circle of support, and start bringing that into their life, a circle of support as they go through this journey.
When they begin to start the journey and as we begin to do this process, can you just go over very quickly some very key points that we should keep in mind before we start?
Well, it's very useful to use tapping on day-to-day stuff, your little frustrations, your overwhelms, your anxieties, for a period of time so you're very comfortable using tapping on what's coming up in your life. You're stuck in traffic, tap, tap, tap. You didn't get the contract, tap, tap, tap. A bill arrives and makes you feel very fearful about your future, tap, tap, tap. And as you develop some skill of bringing yourself relief, then you start asking the questions, what does this remind me of? I want to do this, but I can't. I don't feel safe. Why? What if there was an event that I could use for this? And as those events start coming up, and again, I encourage people to start slowly. Sometimes we don't because we're just ready. The big one comes up and it's coming, and that's okay. But go in there with the kind of compassionate energy that you would have liked to have brought, like to have had in your world back when you had that experience. Now, I need to say, sometimes, though, the deepest healing occurs when you ask yourself, well, how do I feel about this child? And you tap for how you feel about the child. It may be, she's too weak. I don't like her. Why? This kind of energy exploration is a journey. You don't need to rush it. Take baby steps. Bring yourself just a little bit of relief, a little bit of relief, and then just notice how it's affecting the rest of your life. And look for the things that you can appreciate and feel grateful for in your now, how things are different now. We often tap with inner children about, things are different now. You made it through. I'm so proud of your courage. You had such strength. You had such courage. You were so smart not to challenge him, even though you wanted to say that. It was really smart, wasn't it? It wouldn't have worked out very well. And we laugh and we play and we do things like that. So, all of those kinds of approaches, you can't get it really wrong by what you say, because you're just working with how you feel and the energies, and just being honest about that. Mm-hmm. Be honest about how you feel. Tapping, to me, at its essence, is, even though I honestly feel like this, I choose to accept myself, my feelings, and move toward well-being.
And Rick, let's wrap up with talking about this light at the end of the tunnel. For many that might feel a little bit overwhelmed with starting this journey, what can you talk about your experience and some experiences that your clients have had and how it's really changed their life? It's changed their life in the present moment as well as the way that they see their future.
I've been really blessed, Jessica, to bear witness and be a support for people that have been on a journey that many times by the time they attract tapping into their life, some people have been working on themselves, improving themselves, healing themselves for 5, 10, 20, 30 years or more. And the first thing that I say is that trust that it's shown up at the right time for you, just like the other things that were part of your journey. And as I've worked with people, you haven't attracted tapping into your life unless you have an asking, a strong asking to heal. And as we look at people who have a strong asking, many times their emotions are very strong and very intense. And one of the things that I've noticed is that the journey is often, we work on some specific events, and the person feels pretty darn good. They've got hope. They know that they can do this now, or they at least have a belief that they could. They'd like to, they see that light at the end of the tunnel. And they build up their energy. They build up their resilience. And then something will come up, maybe something even more intense, maybe something that they didn't even know was there. And it can feel like a setback. But one of the things that having a professional in your life can give you is an understanding at that moment that, you know, it's the journey. When you build up your strength, you now can go from picking up pebbles to picking up rocks, and it'll feel about the same. And you'll get to a place where even the biggest boulder, you can almost balance on one finger. I have seen people with such incredible stories get to a place, and not in 1 minute, but over the course of months, they get to a place where suddenly something comes up. Most of the time they're aware of it, but sometimes they weren't. A memory or something that is so core to what they want to shift in their life. And yet they have the strength, they have the sense of trust in themselves and the trust in their circle of support. They know that they can do this, and they work through it in a surprisingly short amount of time, and then they're free of it. And they can grow and expand and have a much broader comfort zone than they did before. That is what is so beautiful about this. You know, people that go from being absolutely terrified of speaking in front of their employees to completely changing the way that their business is so that everybody gets an opportunity to speak from their heart when it's right for them, but nobody's pressured to do something that's not right for them. Very different kind of environment. People who have struggled with weight all their life because it helped them feel safe. And they've gone through this event and this event and this event and this event and this event, and they come to a place where they haven't lost a pound necessarily, but they look at their weight in a different way. They say, you know, I could not have survived this process without this insulation, without this extra sense of me, the strength that it gives my bones to have carried around an extra 100 pounds for 10 years. Wow, my bones have been stronger, and I feel myself, I feel my inner strength. And then, yes, their weight, their physiology, their well-being will shift. People who have wanted to go out and change their careers, but they're tied because of rules. They were told, if you don't work hard, you'll never amount to anything. And they've worked hard and worked hard and worked hard, and they have millions of dollars sometimes, but they don't feel that they've amounted to anything. And when they go back and do inner tapping on being poked in the chest by their father, you'll never amount to anything unless you work yourself to death. Know that. And they tap on that, and then suddenly they realize not only have they become something that they're very proud of, but they have the freedom to do different things that don't require working so hard. Mm-hmm. That's what I see every day in this field. I'm incredibly blessed to work with people and to be a part of the circle of very passionate people that are coming together to talk about these subjects, to raise people's awareness about what is possible and to explore the leading edge of expanding our comfort zones, releasing the old baggage so that we can be free, truly emotionally free.
Well, Rick, thank you so much for leading the way and for sharing all these incredible insights. I can already imagine all the people who've only been impacted by your words and haven't even done the process yet. And I'm look forward to hearing from people and seeing how this information changes their lives. So, Rick, once again, thank you.
Well, thank you, Jeff.